Please Give Me Back My $2 by Dr. Liam Lenton of the School of Economics and Finance at La Trobe University.
Supporters of Australia's bid to host the 2018 FIFA World Cup were delighted to hear about the federal government's recent decision to award $46.5 million to Football Federation Australia. The money will help support the sport's governing body to launch a competitive bid in advance of the decision on hosting rights by the FIFA Executive Committee, expected sometime in 2011. The handout amounts to a little over $2 for every single Australian resident. Now, as taxpayers, we are entitled to question how our taxes are spent. In this case, I must admit that I am less than sanguine that my $2, let's round it down for simplicity, will deliver any real benefits. This is not purely because the probability of failing to win the bid is extremely high, for reasons I'll describe later, in which case the $46.5 million becomes what we call in economics a sunk cost. That is to say that we cannot retrieve that cost at all. Rather, it is the concern of what will eventuate in the unlikely event that Australia's bid is successful. Following the announcement, sections of the sports media were close to unambiguously supportive of this move. This has taken the form of naively towing the standard line that hosting the World Cup will deliver untold tourism and other revenues and deliver a badly needed cash injection, hence solving all of our economic problems. Government intervention in major event bids is not necessarily a bad thing. The private sector will only factor benefits and costs that can be measured directly, whereas governments will also consider indirect costs and benefits. They generally believe that these so-called positive externalities arising from the event, such as the general feel-good factor, think Cathy Freeman, marketing for future tourism and other such externalities, will easily outweigh negative externalities, such as noise and congestion and the like. However, not all is as it seems. The problem with these standard arguments in favour of hosting these large events is that all estimates of costs and revenues outlined in the successful bid prove to be unrealistic once preparation progresses and the event itself approaches. Now, in this case, the consultants that were brought in by the FFA, PricewaterhouseCoopers, estimate 5.3 billion added to GDP and 74,000 new jobs. History is littered with examples of budgets that have blown out without logical explanation, mainly on the cost side. Most obviously, the high-profile cases of the 1976 Montreal Summer Olympics and the 1998 Nagano Winter Olympics. Even a few events held in Australia in the last 5 years or so have failed to live up to the hype. Recent work by Monash University's John Madden suggests that even the Sydney Olympics, which was considered to be a relative success financially, delivered little further economic benefit after the event itself concluded, and this was something that was factored into the original calculations. So, why does history keep repeating itself? With major events, the bidder is essentially a purchaser trading with a monopolist, FIFA in this case, and is dealing with an all-or-nothing proposition. That is, the winner has to host the entire event, even though hosting a fraction of it may be the optimal quantity, as it were. Therefore, overbidding is likely, meaning the successful city or country suffers from what we call in economics winner's curse. Okay, you were the winner in the bid, therefore you were successful, but if only one other bidder in that auction bid too much, then you, by definition, have also bid too much. And in fact, you've overbid by more than the other bidder. The curse itself will be more acute for the Australian bid, given the far greater deficiency of FIFA standard stadia compared to rival bids. The ones that they're particularly worried about are Spain and England, but recently Japan has also joined the race for bidding rights as well. Before the football community issues a fatwa on me, I'd like to assert that I am not anti-major events, much less am I anti-football. There, I called it by its proper name. It is more that I simply do not have nearly enough faith in the highly political fashion in which the FIFA Executive Committee goes about making decisions regarding the World Cup. As an illustration, some may recall the questionable manner in which Oceania FIFA delegate Charlie Dempsey abstained from voting, effectively awarding the 2006 World Cup to Germany, delaying FIFA's earlier in-principle agreement on staging a World Cup in Africa by 4 years. Linked to that was the decision to award an automatic qualification spot in the World Cup finals to Oceania in 2002. Yet within a year, the CONMEBOL, South America, Confederation had manoeuvred the political pieces around to reverse the decision, handing them back that half a spot. While CONMEBOL may have some power within FIFA circles, UEFA still holds the largest minority bloc on the committee, effectively 9 of 24 votes, plus President Sepp Blatter, and the overwhelming majority of influence in Zurich. Ultimately, I cannot believe for a nanosecond that UEFA will allow a third successive World Cup to be staged outside its shores, following South Africa and then Brazil in 2014. The latter is the first time we will see two consecutive tournaments outside Europe since the inaugural tournament in 1930. Australia needs first to further its position in the world game before a bid to host the world's largest single sporting event will be received as seriously by the rest of the world as it is by Frank Lowy and Ben Buckley. While progress here is being made, key indicators will have to continue to improve first, such as A-League attendances and the ranking of the men's national team. As an alternative, perhaps future resources should be aimed at bidding for other FIFA events for which Australia would have a more realistic chance of winning hosting rights, and at a far lower cost, by the way. Events such as the Women's World Cup or the Club World Championship would be at the top of the list here. In any event, while I can ultimately do without the $2, well, I'll simply forego my usual morning flat white tomorrow and still be ahead on change, the question of opportunity cost is nonetheless valid. That is, what else could we have done as a community with those funds in terms of health, education, or even social services?